And again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
This is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. Donahue, the president of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights, is back with us on Church and Culture, and we're going to talk about a very important matter, and that is the war against Cardinal Pell, which is the title of an article that Bill has written and had posted on the Catholic League website, which is a definitive answer to all of the accusations and implications of the trial that is facing Cardinal Pell in Australia. Bill, welcome to Church and Culture.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dale. Thank you.
You know, Bill, I went and met with Cardinal Pell about 10 years ago in Sydney, and I spent enough time in Australia talking to enough people to know even then that he was a widely hated man as well as a widely beloved man. He was hated, as you described in your article, for standing up for basic church teaching. And I can see very well how this state of affairs, where it looks clearly like the elitist forces have come together to try to simply persecute the man that they've despised for defending Catholic Orthodoxy.
Yeah, well, it's true in Australia. It's true in Europe. Sadly, it's true in North America. I wrote a piece a few years back about how the goal was to get the scalp of a bishop. And I was talking about, and I zeroed in on the Midwest, because that's where National Catholic Reporter is and some of these other organizations which have helped to create the problem and then blame Orthodox Catholics for it. Their goal has always been to bring down somebody. And the closest they got was they mistreated Bishop Finn out of Kansas City. They mistreated Neidstadt, Archbishop Neidstadt. But they didn't, that wasn't good enough. They wanted to get a cardinal in this country. So now they've shifted, they meaning it's the same ilk, it's the same mindset. It's not a conspiracy. It's right out in the open. But the Catholic left, more than even the secular left, the Catholic left, which will never take responsibility for fomenting the sexual abuse scandal, for promoting the idea of a libertine sexual ethic, which led to the destruction of the seminaries and the gay population in the 1970s. They'll never take responsibility for that. So what they try to do is to blame the, quote, sexually repressive teachings defended by Orthodox people. Now, in Australia, that would be Pell. He's bigger than life. He's not just a big man. He's the third highest-ranking member of the Vatican. So if you can take him down, that would be the big scalp that they want.
He is a big man. He's an impressive man. He's smart. He's articulate. He has a commanding presence. And as you point out at the very beginning of your article, again entitled The War Against Cardinal Pell, I mean, he has been one of the most proactive bishops in, facing up to the priest sex abuse problem.
And he has, but he's also defended the church's teachings on sexual ethics, which is a teaching which puts an emphasis on restraint and on sexual reticence. Well, his enemies, the ones who created the problem, the Paul Shanley people, they're the ones who believe that everything goes. That's why they supported the book by a former priest, Anthony Kosnick, called Human Sexuality, which was able to justify, if not relativize, every form of sexual expression, including bestiality. And that book was popular in many of the seminaries in the 1970s. It created the monsters like the Paul Shanleys because it gave them a green light. And now that cosmic book has always been touted by the National Catholic Reporter as well. So the left has always had a foot in on this. They've helped create the milieu. And then when guys like Pell come along and hold up a big stop sign and say we can't put up with this any longer, they turned on him. They turned on Benedict the 16th because he made it clear that any kind of practicing homosexual was not welcome in the seminaries because of the abuse scandal. And so this is where we're at. It's pernicious, because how dare the people who helped to create the problem have the right to turn around and point their guns at the people who are trying to say enough is enough? It really is stunning.
Well, Bill, you and I were shoulder to shoulder back when the bishops of the United States put together their report, which, you know, had a brief mention of the distinction you make quite clearly in your piece on Cardinal Pell, and that is that we're really not talking about pedophilia as much as we're talking about homosexual men preying on post-pubescent teenage boys. And as you know, I stood up and I asked the then president of the USCCB, Archbishop Gregory, whether this was clear in the report. He said yes, but of course they moved right on. There's never been any kind of affirmation of the basic point that this entire scandal is about homosexual activity, not about pederasty.
Well, that can't be said enough, and unfortunately we're among the very, very few in the United States willing to say what's honest. Let me just stay with this for a second here, Dale. How do we know it's homosexual driven? We know from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice report on this, where they concluded that between 1950 and 2002, 100% of the victimizers, of course, were male, 81% of the victims were male, 78% of them were post-pubescent. And they concluded that less than 5% were pedophile. Now, if a man has sex with an adolescent man, that's not pedophilia. That's homosexuality. That's what John Jay found. And even they didn't have the guts to finger homosexuality. They didn't blame it on pedophilia, because the data showed that you couldn't. So how did they get around it? They said it's possible for a man to have sex with a man and he could self-identify as something other than a homosexual. Well, I don't care what somebody self-identifies as. If a vegetarian says he's a vegetarian and he likes eating hot dogs, he's not a vegetarian.
Correct.
Okay? I can say I'm a Chinese dwarf. I'm not a Chinese dwarf. I'm a big Irishman. All right? So I don't. That may be interesting to psychologists. Self-identity has nothing to do with the truth. Okay? And so even they wouldn't say anything. Listen, every bishop I've spoken to, cardinals, they know what the problem is. How many of them are going to make the statement? Because people say, well, you're blaming all homosexuals. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Most homosexual priests, I have no reason to believe, most homosexual priests are not predators. However, most of the predators were homosexual.
Well, and not just most, all but 5%.
Well, then there were some in there in between the 81% and the 5% who were straight and who had an affair with the gal, maybe a teenage gal. But and by the way, the figure, we're talking about Australia as well. The figure in the United States is 81% of the victims male. In Australia, it's pretty much the same. It's 78%. But, you know, even there, there's a picture of the Daily Mail, the English publication. They have a picture of a guy sitting on the lap of an Australian abuser. That's their Paul Shanley, this Gerald Ridsdale. And they refer to the priest as a pedophile. As the kid is sitting on his lap, they describe as a 14-year-old. Well, if you're 14 years of age, you're post-pubescent. You're not prepubescent. But again, they just simply declare, as they do in the United States, they have a vested ideological interest in blaming pedophilia, when in fact it's homosexuality. And again, I'm not saying that because you're a homosexual, therefore you're going to become a predator.
Right.
I'm simply saying that, look, I'll give you an example. I'm Irish. My people have a problem with the drink. Same thing with Native Americans, okay? The Chinese have a higher incidence of lung cancer because they like to smoke. Now, look, these things just happen to be true, okay? Blacks are more likely to be involved in street crime than are Italians, okay? Every group has some kind of incident where you can say they're disproportionate for whatever reason. Nature, nurture, that's another argument. All I'm simply saying is, why can't we simply say that homosexuals have to be treated with the same respect as heterosexuals, at the same time recognize that we do have a problem here where the lion's share of the problem is with homosexuals. Let's admit to it and let's get to the root of it and deal with it. No, we continue to lie. And the lying is all over the media. It's in the church. It's in the left, the secular left, and it's in the Catholic left. A refusal to call a spade a spade.
You know, and there's such an irony to this cover-up because, as you said earlier, and you, as you quote in your article about Cardinal Pell, the main argument for the cause of this sexual abuse is the Orthodox teaching, the hierarchy, the authoritarianism, the masculine dominance in the church, and yet, at the same time, these accusers, who all stand for loosening up the sexual teaching of the church, especially on homosexuality, they are completely ignoring the fact that it was homosexual behavior that was at the heart of the abuse, meaning that the changes in Catholic moral theology that they themselves are endorsing are the cause of the problem. So they're really trying to make the problem worse.
Well, they are, and it's disingenuous. I think liberals and conservatives, Catholics and non-Catholics alike, would agree what I'm going to say next. The 1950s, as compared to the 60s and 70s, was a decade of sexual restraint. All right?
Yeah.
You take a look at out of wedlock birth rates. You can take, I know abortion was illegal at that time, but still, there weren't even many illegal abortions. There were only 39 in 1972, the year before Roe v. Wade. We know about all the lies that have been told, about all the thousands. But you didn't have, the birth control pill didn't come on the market until 1960. But the 1950s in the seminaries, there was a much stricter adherence to Catholic teachings. Now, if, in fact, it's Catholic sexual repressiveness that causes people to act out in a reckless way to abuse people, then we should have, the 50s should be loaded with it. But nobody argues that libertine sexual teachings took place in the 50s. No, that broke loose into the 60s, into the 70s. It's precisely when the Catholic Church got away from its own sexual ethics and began to mirror the more libertine, relaxed understanding of sexuality of the dominant culture, that it got into this problem. The answer to sexual license is not more of it. It's to pull back. No one's asking for a moral straitjacket. What we're simply saying is that when you tell people who have a tendency to be wayward in the first place, straight or gay, that it's okay to act out, don't be shocked when they do so.
Well, I'm going to say this, and you don't have to agree with it, Bill, but I think the reason for the homosexual cover-up is precisely because there is a very large strain of homosexual disposition among the clergy. And as I say, disposition does not, and as you said, doesn't mean action. But to draw any close scrutiny of homosexuality among the priesthood would definitely uncover some not so happy facts.
Well, one doesn't have to be a conservative. I'm a conservative. You're a conservative. One of the most famous liberal Catholic writers of the 20th century would agree with what you just said. His name is Father Andrew Greeley. He said, it's his words, not mine, not yours, that there's a lavender mafia in the Catholic Church, and he's talking about the clergy, right? So sometimes people can come together, even if they disagree on many other things. He certainly wasn't blind to the fact that there's a problem. Just a few weeks ago, we know about a major situation where this Monsignor was involved just outside the Vatican. One of these rooms actually led into the Vatican, where the guys are boozing it up and having orgies, homosexual orgies, of course, always homosexual orgies. And he got called. So the problem continues. One has to wonder when it will ever be weeded out altogether. But, this is recklessness, and one doesn't have to be a conservative. Really certainly understood the problem, and he is right.
Now we have also Father James Martin, well-known Jesuit, who has, I believe he's still editor of America Magazine, isn't he?
Well, he's editor-at-large, which is another way of saying he's unemployed.
He's written a book calling for a reevaluation of how the church relates, not just to homosexuals, but to lesbians and transsexuals, the LGBT crowd. Have you looked into whether that book crosses the line or not?
Well, I haven't read it. I certainly know Father Martin. He's preoccupied with this issue. I think his guy, whom we both like, Archbishop Chaput, wrote that it would be good if he emphasized more in his work on homosexuals the need for them to repair to Catholic teachings and practice it, that they need to convert. Homosexuals need to convert to Catholicism if they're involved in a homosexual lifestyle. So, if the emphasis is only on what we have to do to welcome people. Look, no one's in favor, unless he's some kind of an animal, in going around and beating up on and bullying homosexuals because they're homosexuals. I don't think that's a controversial statement. So the question is, what are we to do in terms of welcoming? We're supposed to have a party? I don't understand.
Well, I invited Father Martin, because I know him a little bit from the past, to be on Church and Culture, but I didn't hear back from him. Because I would like to have an honest conversation about this issue with someone as intelligent and respected as Father James Martin.
Well, a lot of liberals don't like to be challenged, as you well know. And quite frankly, anybody who's watched cable TV knows when you do have a liberal against a conservative, very rare these days, by the way, it used to be much more popular in the 80s and 90s, the liberals lose. They lose almost all the time. That's because their arguments are losers. So the idea of having a liberal Catholic, be a lay person or a cleric, debate his position with somebody who's going to ask him some pointed questions, as you would, it's not going to fit too well. They run over CNN or MSNBC, and they know they'll be treated there with kid gloves. Yeah. I mean, if you're a conservative, you have to be challenged by everybody. That's the way it is.
Kind of like the time I went on last year with Scott Appleby on Raymond Arroyo's show about
I remember that.
Migration. I mean, you can't defend the indefensible, can you? I mean, you just can't.
No, and that's why they want to play it safe, and that's why they live in a bubble, and that's why they're all furious now because of this one congressman who's head of a Democratic campaign committee who came out and said that we shouldn't have a litmus test on abortion. And NARAL, Planned Parenthood, Emily's List, all the predictable pro-abort groups went crazy. They want a litmus test. You have to be in favor of abortion on demand in order to get 5 cents from the Democratic Party. That's their position. And so there's a big war going on about that now.
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell says they should start their own party. The women of the Democratic Party should start their own political party.
I would be in favor of that.
Me too. The Democrats would never win another election.
We could have. I would only vote for that if Rosie was elected the president. She has great organizational skills and tremendous intellect.
And she's excellent diplomacy.
Yeah.
Now, to go back to Cardinal Pell for a second, you asked the question in your article, can Pell get a fair trial? How does that look?
It doesn't look good for several reasons. It's actually gotten worse since I wrote that a few weeks ago. Well, for one thing, it's The trial will be held in the state of Victoria. Victoria is known as the People's Republic of Victoria. It's the most left-wing venue that he could possibly get, and strongly anti-Christian, particularly hating Catholics. I use the word hate. I didn't say dislike.
Right.
Just this week, it was reported that they are coming up in Queensland, which is the third largest of the states there. They have a new stricture. If a child in a playground, a child in a public school playground, is heard dropping the name Jesus, he will be sanctioned, he will be disciplined. If a child were to give a Christmas card with any kind of religious theme, he will be sanctioned. Now, this is fascism, sponsored by the state. This is what we would expect from North Korea. And this is happening all over. The Hobart Archbishop, Porteus, who's one of the best there, an outspoken defender of Pell, he was called on the carpet about a year and a half ago before the authorities and explain why it's okay for him to say that marriage should be between a man and a woman. They are punishing evangelicals and Catholics throughout Australia, not just in Queensland and Victoria, but throughout Australia, who say anything that could be considered to be not exactly gay-friendly. The gay issue is a sickness. It is a pathological disorder consuming the Western world. It's everything we read, everything we touch, and there's no longer, of course, can you say, well, different strokes for different folks. They don't want your tolerance. You must affirm, and if you do not affirm, you will be sanctioned. And in Australia, it's taken to ridiculous lengths. There's another reason why Pell can't get a fair trial there. They have no voir dire. A voir dire in this country means a questioning of prospective jurors. That's when they ask the jurors, trying to weed them out, about what kind of biases they might have for or against the defendant. They don't have that in Victoria. So you got a hotbed of anti-Catholicism. You've got they're increasing the pressure, going after the kids. They're going after the children now in Australia. And they're not going to have any way to filter out an animus against Catholics or against Pell. And he's supposed to get a fair trial there in October? I don't think
so. How do they pick jurors then?
I'm not exactly certain whether it's how random it might be, but I do know that the voir dire, the question of prospective jurors, does not exist in the state of Victoria. They have something like it else in other parts.
So, you know, to look at, when I read your article, I was reminded about some things I knew, but some things I didn't know, and that is that there have been accusations made against Pell for a long time, and all of them have been found to be completely baseless.
Well, the accusers are drug addicts, they're alcoholics, they're woman beaters, there are people who've been, they're ex-cons, not just some of them, quite a few of them. By the way, we don't even know what exactly he's charged with yet. We'll find that on October the 6th. He doesn't even have a chance to plead guilty yet.
Well, does he know what he's been charged with?
No, he doesn't know.
How can he defend himself?
I used to think Australia was a free country. I don't know what's
I mean, how can you defend yourself? I thought that was the first right of anybody brought before the court.
He got himself a first-class blue-chip lawyer who has not been able to plead not guilty because they don't know what the charges are. They have an inkling, but they don't know the specific charges. We know, for example, that two boys they were boys at the point, back 40 years ago in the late 1970s, they only claimed it a few years ago, only a few years ago, but they claimed about the 1970s that Pell was horsing around with them in the pool. He picked them up on his shoulder and he threw them. So, well, they said that he inappropriately touched them. Well, let me tell you something. I have no idea what world these people believe that they think they live in. If, in fact, you really were abused, you really would have said something, you should have said something. When it happened, you wouldn't wait for 40 years, and that's the best you can do? That inappropriately touched you when he threw you in the air in a pool?
I've thrown a lot of kids in a pool.
Well, I mean, you know, what are they going to do, bring out the Navy SEALs? this is insanity.
Well, we have to have guidelines on what kind of pool throwing is allowed.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Another kid who claimed that he was abused by Pell, unfortunately overdosed on drugs. But before he did, before he OD'd, he told his mother on two occasions that he lied when he said that he was abused. This is the kind of stuff that, they're going to have. Now, you know, there's a reason why statute of limitations should exist in any free country, because memories fade and witnesses die. And so when you go try to adjudicate something, any public person, we're public persons, any public person is subject to being railroaded with this. Somebody can just pop up and say, you know what, my memory was repressed for 50 years, but it came back to me. I was watching Bugs Bunny, and now I remember what happened to me. Stuff goes on, but quite frankly, there's one piece of good news. More and more psychiatrists and psychologists, people, who men and women of renown, who are not necessarily on our side.
Well, you mentioned two reporters in Australia who have been defending Pell, who are not on our side.
That's right. One of them is not a Christian, Andrew Bolt, and the other is a nice gal, Monica Dumit, who writes the Catholic Herald there. But and there are others now speaking up.
Amanda Vanstone, you mentioned.
Yes, yes. But now, see, there are even more now because they're going after the kids for dropping the name Jesus. I'm sure that they could drop an expletive deleted. They could talk the way Scaramucci does, and that would be freedom of speech. To hear a kid say the word Jesus. Now, I wonder if you said the word Jesus in vain, would they still come after you?
No.
The speech police.
No. I can only imagine what's going on in golf courses right now. Everybody's trying to clean up their act. I'm talking with Bill Donahue, the president of the Catholic League. And, again, let's tell our listeners where they can find this article.
Yes, on our Catholic League website. We have it right on the front page, easy to access. I did a little YouTube statement on it as well. Go to CatholicLeague.org, www.CatholicLeague.org, and just don't scroll too far. You'll see it right there. You can click on it. It's a lengthy piece.
Yeah, and please share it. That's what we want to do. We want you to put it up in your social media, print it out, or any way you can share it, put it in your email and send it to people. We need to get this out. It's a complete railroad job. I'll be back with Bill Donahue after this short break.
Calling all grandparents, did you know you have a very important job from which you can never retire? Hi, this is Peggy Stanton. Join me on Power from the Pews to discover what it is. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net.
Princeton's Professor Robert George spoke at the first meeting of the year at the Our Lady of Good Counsel Gospel of Life Group.
Well, I do want to talk with you this evening, as Father said, about something that I know you've all heard people say, and that's the idea that one can be legitimately, reasonably, logically, consistently opposed to the taking of human life in abortion and embryo-destructive research, yet nevertheless pro-choice, respectful of the right of other people to have abortions or to perform deadly experiments on human embryos.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. That was Princeton's Professor Robert George. On our next program, you'll hear him talk about life and so-called Catholic politicians and their abortion views. He'll unmask their clouded thinking and take questions from the audience. Listen to Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
If you've enjoyed Father John Ricardo's gift of teaching and preaching in the past, his new book, Heaven Starts Now, is the book for you. In his inspiring and incisive way, Father John addresses the obstacles we all face in becoming mature disciples. How do we learn to forgive? How do we combat fear and understand suffering? How do we worship the Lord, love others, and surrender our lives to God? How do we become saints day by day? Order online at AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab. That's AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab.
I am back with Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights. Bill, it's not an exact analogy, but I remember when the press turned on Cardinal Law of Boston. And although there was clearly, I think, some mismanagement of the situation he had, they tried to make him the culprit for the entire sex scandal, I think for the same reasons they're going after Cardinal Pell.
Well, that's true, because when you look in, if you read what the Catholic left has to say, Catholic liberals, about the whole sexual abuse scandal, and as well as secular liberals, could be non-Catholic, they use the poster boy of Cardinal Law. And they said, well, that's because he was a conservative. A couple of points about that. He was not a conservative in terms of his governance. He was a liberal. He was a orthodox, theological conservative who had a very hands-off kind of approach and delegated to such people, such as Bishop McCormick, okay, who later became bishop in Manchester, New Hampshire. Now, he made a lot of these horrible decisions. The other thing I want to point out is this, that there was another fellow who not only did not report to Rome child abusers, he himself was having sex with his boyfriend, and he ripped the church off for $450,000. His name is Archbishop Rembert Weakland. He's almost never mentioned by these people because Weakland is a man of the left. So they make Law out to be a conservative. He was, theologically speaking, but not in terms of administrative governance. And they don't mention Weakland, who himself was involved with sexual relationships, covered up, and he was a thief.
And as I wrote at the time, Cardinal Law's diocese did not have the level of sexual abuse activity as did the Archdiocese of Los Angeles.
And so Mahoney's liberal, and that's what they
yeah, and so Mahoney got some criticism, but not very much, and the amount of damages that were paid in Los Angeles exceeded any other diocese in the country.
That's a good point. That has to be hammered home. You know, and we got to remember too that it was Law's predecessor, Humberto Madero's, Cardinal Madero's. He appointed Paul Shanley, the child rapist, as his representative for sexual minorities. Paul Shanley, who had sex with anyone from the age of 6 to 76, provided that he was male. He had to be male. Children, adolescents, and adults, mostly adults. Much of it consensual. He said there were 34 sexual minorities. You know, I guess I'm stupid. I can't think of more than maybe two. But he said there were 34. Now, Cardinal Medeiros knew that the hippie priest, as he called himself, was already been reported to the Boston Archdiocese as a sexual molester. And he was appointed in charge of sexual minorities in the 1970s. And then when Medeiros found out that Shanley would not play ball with him, and they asked him on two occasions to sign a fidelity statement, kind of an oath that you accept the teachings of the Catholic Church. He said, forget it. I'm not signing this. And the Archdiocese of Boston said, that's okay. That's quite all right. It's okay with us. So if people want to know about corruption, now remember the 1970s was the decade when the Pope, Pope Paul VI, I think it was in 72, said that the smoke of Satan is in the church. That's not Neil Hudson, Bill Donahue talking. Pope Paul VI, the smoke of Satan is in the church. What he was talking about, obviously, was this wholesale collapse and relaxation of sexual ethics to the point where it mirrored the kind of Plato's retreat for straight people, what was going on in New York City. You know, the sexual revolution ideologically took ferment in the 1960s. Behaviorally, the acting out was in the 1970s, in and out of the church. And it came to a halt in the 1980s. How do we know this? John Jay study, criminal justice. What was the timeline for the scandal? Almost all of it. 1965 to 1985. Now, what why did it start in 65? Because of the sexual revolution. It was people like Hugh Hefner in the 50s who started it, and then Helen Gurley Brown, Cosmopolitan for Women. And, of course, you had the whole feminist revolution in the 1960s, Betty Friedan, 1963.
And the pill.
The feminine mystique. Yeah. Now all this happened. And then the acting out in the seminaries and all over in the parks took place in the 70s. The STD rate went crazy. AIDS was discovered in 1981. Whoa, whoa. AIDS? Yeah. And it was AIDS for the people who were acting recklessly, and that put the brakes on them. I remember doing a show with a gay guy back around, I'm saying, 89, 90, with Larry King. And the guy said to me, you know, anybody can get AIDS. I said, no, not anybody can get AIDS. I'm not going to get it. I said, I don't sleep around, I don't take drugs, and I don't practice anal sex. I said, now you may get it, but I'm not going to get it, not unless I get it through a transfusion. He denied that, and 2 years later, he was dead. He died of AIDS. And I'm still alive, drinking my beer.
You know, one of your quotations in your article on Cardinal Pell really made me laugh out loud. That's when you quoted Father Jerry O'Hanlon, Jesuit from Dublin, who blamed the top-down model of leadership during the tenure of John Paul II for the poor response on sexual abuse. Now, here you are blaming a saint, of course, but you're blaming the one pope in modern times who did the most to try to clarify Catholic moral teaching on sexuality. He did it in a way that really has revolutionized in a dynamic way the evangelical message of our church.
Well, you know what I always love about these guys? They always talk about the institutionalized centralization, top-down hierarchy of the Catholic Church. My doctorate's in sociology. I have never heard of an organization, beginning with the smallest of them all, the family, if you want to call it an organization. I've never known of a cell unit, a group, or organization, which wasn't hierarchical. Not a single one. In fact, Karl Marx famously said in Das Kapital, in order to establish equality, we must first establish inequality. Well, you don't have to establish it, exist.
Well, Lenin did that very well.
Yeah, he did it very well, right. So they act like as if that had something to do with it. Well, all organizations have a hierarchy, including that run by dissident organizations. So if that were the case, then why would this be confined from 65 to 85? See, if they said, John Jay and the others who looked into this, if they said that the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church was confined to the 1940s and 50s, you could make a good case that must have something quirky to do with Catholic teachings of a conservative sort. But they didn't say that. They chose the year 65 to 85. That's the run of the sexual revolution. It's undeniable. It's not a gray area. It's not debatable. It was sexual libertinism in ideas which yielded sexual recklessness behaviorally, which is responsible for the problems and for the STDs and the out-of-wedlock births and the abortions and the homosexuality. It's there. What else could it be? If it was a tightening of sexual ethics, that would have been then the whole thing should have exploded in the 50s. So they don't have a leg to stand on intellectually. They're wrong all the way around.
Bill, is there any way we can help Cardinal Pell beyond praying for him? I mean, he's a half a globe away in another country, in another jurisdiction. Is there anything we can do for him?
I think the only thing that we can do in this country is to get the word out to the public. I was at a place last week with some friends, and one guy who's generally on our side, he's not Catholic, but he's generally on our side, said to me, oh, Bill, I heard about that Aussie cardinal, the Cardinal Pell. I said, he doesn't look good. I said, how much do you know about him? He said, well, not too much. I said, what you've heard is wrong. I want you to read what I've written. And he said he would. I haven't spoken to him since. But I think, you know, education can help. It's not an elixir. In terms of affecting things in Australia, I don't know. I'm not sure, in all honesty, what we can do. to affect the outcome there. But I do think that we need to challenge the myths and the lies that have been told about Cardinal Pell in our own backyard to at least have the press give him more of a fair hearing. Because it's really not Pell on trial. It's Orthodox Catholicism that's on trial. That's what they really want to do. And, you know, the damage, here's the problem, Dale. Let's just say that even given the low standards of jurisprudence that exist in Australia, the fact that they won't even screen out those who have a bias against Pell or Catholicism to in his trials, and the fact that they don't have witnesses and cooperate, and you're going back 30 and 40 years. Okay, let's say that he does prevail in the courts. The people who hate him, the Catholic left, the secular left, they are right about one thing. Even if they don't prevail in the courts, they want to prevail in the court of public opinion. They want to mess this guy up. They want to destroy his reputation. So what we can do is on that end, we may not be able to affect the courts in terms of the legal proceedings in Australia, but we surely can have some effect in clearing his name and pointing out the truth about Pell and fighting back against those people who want to bring him down in the court of public opinion. That's something we can do. It's something we must do.
Bill Donahue, would you agree with me that sometime around the beginning of October, just before this trial of Cardinal Pell starts, the left-wing media and the left-wing of the Catholic Church media will begin a kind of echo chamber effect talking about how important it is that Cardinal Pell be convicted and receive his comeuppance?
Oh, yeah, and they some of them will be a little bit more careful. They'll have one line in there, exculpatory, saying, well, we know he's innocent until proven guilty. But the entire article will be front-loaded against him to give the impression that, okay, they have that gratuitous statement there. That's perfunctory. But in essence, they want him convicted. And I say, it's really Catholicism on trial, Orthodox teachings of Catholicism. The National Catholic Reporter, to cite one example, rejects the Catholic Church's teachings in toto on sexuality. They don't agree with the church on homosexuality, on abortion, same-sex marriage, right down the line. Anybody has any doubts about it, just go read it. You'll see what I'm talking about. You might find a few columnists here and there who might be okay on abortion, but particularly when you get into the gay issue, they're crazy. And matters sexual, they're off the charts. So Pell is their poster boy. He's the one they want to get, because by getting him, they're really taking a shot at Catholic teachings on the subject. Now, they don't talk much about the Pope, because the Pope, while he's left on socio-economic issues, he's been pretty good on the moral issues, so they kind of give him a pass. Sometimes they've been rapping him, actually. Some of the secular leftists have been rapping him. The Catholic left doesn't want to do that because they need him when it comes to a more socialistic understanding of economic forces. So they have to dance around this a bit. But it's like anything else. As Jesus said, the truth shall prevail. It'll win out. Remember what J.P. 2 said, which he got that line from Jesus, be not afraid. But and I say that knowing that there's an awful lot of people, perhaps many of them listening to this program, their instincts are good. They're good Catholics. They've got the right prayer count. They know what's going on. The one thing they may lack is courage. And you know what? We can't give that to you if you're listening. That's something that you have to develop yourself.
The fortitude of Cardinal Pell is well known. But what kind of impact do you think this is having on him personally at this point? How old a man is Cardinal Pell?
I think he's 75, recall. Something like that, 75, 76. He's in the mid-70s. I don't know that he's in bad health, but his doctors did warn him about making that enormous flight halfway around the world to break it up in two. You know, what it does to you psychologically, as well as physically, one often follows the other, it's got to be traumatic for him. That's why I asked Cardinal Dolan to get my piece to him, and he said that he would. There are too many people in the church who, when this subject of sexual abuse comes up, they're nervous. They run for the hills. And unfortunately, there are a number of Catholic organizations, at least the organizations in name, who are great when it comes to cheerleading, when the church has done something good, and the Pope has done something good, and we have a new Pope, and it's something meritorious. They're great cheerleaders, but they're not combatants. They don't want to be gladiators. They don't want to get their hands dirty. So when it comes to issues such as sexual abuse and homosexuality, they know the way the dominant culture thinks about it, and they run for the hills. These people are cowards. I don't blame the average Catholic as much because that person's she's taking care of the kids, or he's a salesman or a teacher or whatever. He's got many things to do. I'm talking about Catholic leaders who claim to be on the side of the church, and I think they are, but they're cowards, and they never speak up for Cardinal Pell. And I think that is a shame that there are so many of them.
Well, there are some very, very strong bishops and archbishops in Australia. Surely they can have some sort of impact in the public square.
Well, this Porteus from Hobart is the best of them. The actual collective statement from the Australian bishops, I thought, was disappointing.
What was that? Afterwards. What did they say?
Well, they stand by their man. They think he's innocent, not been treated fairly. But it was short. It wasn't pointed. I don't think it was a success. But the Hobart bishop there is very outspoken. He's very good. And look, it's the same thing in this country. It's the same thing anyplace. You're going to have some who are good, who are brave and speaking out, Archbishop Chaput and many others. And then you're going to get the others who are somewhat quiet, never mind the ones who might be leaning on the other side on some issues. And it's the ones who are quiet that have always been the problem, because you're not going to win in a culture war by prayer alone. No, you're not going to win without prayer. It's a necessary, but it's not a sufficient condition of winning in the culture war. And that's why I don't agree with Rod Dreher and these other people who think that we can run to the hills and become monks or quasi-monks.
What a disappointment Rod has become. You know, I gave him a start at Crisis Magazine as my movie reviewer.
Well, he has a piece out in the New York Times. It might be in the hard copy tomorrow. It's up on the website about, it's the same old thing, same old argument, except that he's angry at the evangelicals. He's angry at the evangelicals because they didn't call out Scaramucci for his foul language. Well,
Oh, come on.
I'm not kidding. You've got to see this piece. It's up on the website of the New York Times. It may be in the hard copy tomorrow. That's what he said. He says none of them called out Scaramucci, as if they have to become the language police. You don't have to like everything about...
That's so true. It's so trivial.
But that's where it's coming from. Look, he's angry because so many of the evangelicals have embraced Trump. They should embrace Trump. He's got the right policies. You could have problems with the persona of the man. I do. But that doesn't mean I have a problem with his policies. If he's religion-friendly, which he is, and his predecessor was not, and the person he ran against was not, why wouldn't that matter? Isn't there something called the Supreme Court and other issues that matter? That even if I have problems with somebody here and there and being too impulsive and the like, okay, fine. A lot of those criticisms are true. But a mature person makes his decision based on the policies that are going to affect the country, not on such trivia as some jerk who came to work for 10 days and spoke like a pig.
Well, perhaps the... upcoming trial of Cardinal Pell in October would give an opportunity for people like you and me and others to readdress the issue of homosexuality as being at the root cause of the scandal in the first place.
I think that's true, and I think that and you can't talk about that without also mentioning it's an entire philosophical mindset. These people sincerely believe that the church's teachings are too restrictive and that we need to lighten up. They lightened up in the 70s. That's exactly the proximate cause of the problem. So it is amazing that they won't take responsibility for the consequences of their ideas, which have had a deleterious effect on the culture and certainly within the Catholic Church. It can't be said enough. But if we're not going to have Catholic organizations speak up with us. And I'm talking about organizations like Catholic Voices, Catholic Association. What have they ever done to speak up about these?
Nothing.
Issues? Absolutely zero. So, you know, I'm really sick and tired of people out there fundraising, trying to get some old ladies to write a check for them. When, in fact, when the rough times get tough, they get going. Now, we need all Catholics who claim to be leaders to be there and not just be flag wavers.
Well, it seems to me that the publication of Father Martin's book, along with the upcoming trial of Cardinal Pell, gives people an opportunity to address Martin, for example, in terms of this railroading, scapegoating of Cardinal Pell. It's a vast cover-up of the presence of homosexual activity in our church.
It is, and worse, of course, is the fact that they're trying to pin the blame on somebody who's not one of them.
Right.
He's one of the good guys. So that's why I say it's Catholicism on trial. Pell is just the figurehead, and obviously they have to try and get somebody of his stature, the number three man in the Vatican, because, as I say, they don't win in the courts. They're already winning in the court of public opinion, and that's part of their game plan. It's not always what happens by some judge, some magistrate, and what he decided. It's a matter of the perception. They want to feed the idea that the church still has the same problem. I just dealt with this with a New York Times reporter this week on this subject in some exchange of emails. You had over 52,000 members of the clergy in the Catholic Church between 2015 and 2016 when they did the last study about the abuse problem. It went from July 1 of 2015 to June 30, 2016. Of the over 52,000, there were 25 accusations, credible accusations, made against the over 52,000 in that 1 year period of these ones who were current. The number who were substantiated of the 25 were two. Two.
Wow.
Two substantiated. That comes out to 0.004%. There's no institution in America, secular or religious, which has less of a problem with the sexual abuse of minors than the Catholic Church today. And I also blame here, the bishops have to take a lot of the blame themselves. Why is it that Bill Donahue has to extrapolate these numbers from the report and do the computation? Why don't they do it? Why don't they highlight it? Why don't they tout the good news? Why do they begin defensively saying, well, it was great that Spotlight came out because it showed the problem in the church? Well, hello, people. That problem took place a long time ago.
I noticed the movie Spotlight didn't mention homosexuality either.
Of course not. They want to think it's all pedophiles. So they lie about it. And look, if a man has sex with a man and he says he's not a homosexual, I don't care. Maybe he thinks he's a giraffe. He's a homosexual. He's not a pedophile. He has adult with another adult male, post-pubescent. There's a word in the English language for it, but people are scared to death. They might be considered to be anti-gay. Well, that's a real way to proceed, right? Just simply lie. And don't talk about the root cause and don't get down to basics. And then you're going to think you're going to deal with it. Imagine going to a doctor who says, well, I know what the diagnosis is, but I don't want to say it. But then the guy should be fired.
Talking with Bill Donahue, we have a minute left. We've been talking about Cardinal Pell's upcoming trial in October in Australia on some sort of charges of supposed abuse. It looks very, very politicized and anti-Catholic at this moment, at this time. And you can get a copy of Bill's article, The War Against Cardinal Pell, at the website of the Catholic League, which is CatholicLeague.org. Is that right, Bill?
That's correct.
And we want you to share it far and wide, and we want to educate Catholics in this country and possibly in others about the particulars of Cardinal Pell's case, but also the general church and cultural context in which this lynching is happening. Thanks for being a guest on Church and Culture again. We appreciate all the great work you've done, and And frankly, you are the voice of lay Catholics in the United States, and we really appreciate it.
No, the work that you've done in Washington and outside of Washington is something which you get the gold standard, as far as I'm concerned.
Very kind, but I always know I've got somebody in the trench with me as long as you're around.
Yeah, you know you do. You stood by me, and I'm standing by you.
Thank you, Bill. And to all of you who are listening to this brief message, we'll have another wonderful guest.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Time to enjoy the best in Middle Eastern cuisine, music, and entertainment with the St. Rafka Festival, August 5th and 6th at the church in Livonia. Parking and admission is free. For more information, call 734-525-2828. Lace up those running shoes for the Sergeant Patrick O'Rourke Memorial Run Walk, Saturday, August 5th, beginning at Heartland High School. Sergeant O'Rourke was killed in the line of duty in 2012, and this memorial run celebrates all first responders and benefits a number of charities. For more information, call 810-919-8962. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep and to grow.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, living in the real world is not about living in pain and hardship. The Feast of Our Lord's Transfiguration is our immersion into the real world, and it is a glorious one indeed.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
This Sunday we celebrate Jesus' transfiguration, when he took Peter, James, and John with him and was transfigured before them on Mount Tabor. Then his garments shone like the sun, and he spoke with Moses and Elijah. And the voice from heaven revealed him as the prophet foretold by Moses and the anointed servant prophesied by Isaiah. And God acknowledged him as his own beloved son. He did this to prepare the apostles for his passion. Long ago, Moses had taken three companions up a mountain and was overshadowed there by the shining cloud, the Shekinah of God's presence. He too spoke with God, and his face and clothes were radiant. Now, what can the Transfiguration teach us? The Church wants us to contemplate God's plan, his design from before time began. Through Abraham, God had formed the people to whom he revealed himself. Later, he strengthened those prophecies by making a covenant with them, promising that Abraham would be the father of many nations. Remembering their covenant, he raised up Moses and swore an everlasting kingdom to King David's sons. Jesus' transfiguration reveals him as the one through whom God will fulfill his age-old plan. By faith, we've been joined to his people. By faith, we've been made children of the covenant, the new and eternal covenant, which calls us to a holy life and to follow his Son home to heaven. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, coming in on the reading read this Sunday at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
What do we mean when we say the Church is the body of Christ? From the very beginning, Jesus shared with his apostles his mission, his joys and sufferings, and the mystery of the kingdom.